president that separates them. You get to decide what kind of president you are. Are you the president that welcomes people seeking asylum because you understand your own immigrant experience of maybe 100 years ago, or are you going to be the one that restricts it? I'm going to tell you, in this place, it's all about seniority, but I'm not going to wait until I'm here 3 terms to fight like hell for communities that I care deeply about. I know that he heard me, particularly not on the asylum, but certainly on keeping families together, because I made it really personal.
We
This
have
is about
5 seconds.
Boris Hernandez. This is about Boris Hernandez, and he gets to choose what kind of president he wants to be if he wants to earn their vote in November.
Delia Ramirez, we thank you so much for being with us. First Latina Congress member to represent Illinois. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, June 24th at 4:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's board of directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/board recruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a big court case involving the rights of tribes in the Northwest. Summer moves in, bringing more of a risk of wildfires, and Oregon lawmakers trying to help the disabled have more rights to work and not get penalized for it. And hundreds of adorable kittens need new homes. It's prime kitten season in Oregon. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 20th, 2024. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. U.S. District Judge Robert Lasnik has ordered the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, or BNSF, to pay the Swinomish Tribe of Northwest Washington nearly $400 million. The judge had ruled earlier that the company intentionally trespassed when it repeatedly ran 100-car trains carrying crude oil across the tribe's reservation. The company violated a 1991 agreement that allows trains going through the Swinomish Reservation to carry no more than 25 cars per day, BNSF has been running 100-car unit trains of North Dakota crude across sensitive coastal ecosystems to a refinery in Washington. Last year, two BNSF engines derailed on Swinomish land, leaking an estimated 3,100 gallons of diesel fuel near Padilla Bay. The company is expecting to appeal. It's the first day of summer with much warmer weather and forecasters predicting a high-risk wildfire season. Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici was in Washington County explaining how a program that transforms sports facilities into emergency shelters could help the community this year.
So we're going to celebrate funding for the renovations that are going to strengthen THPRD's capacity to serve as a community shelter and emergency operations, not just here at the Cedar Hills Recreation Center, which is really literally close to home for me. My kids went to Cedar Park and we spent time here, and other THPRD sites as well. We're joined by Chair Harrington, Chair Board President Alfredo Moreno, and I know there's some staff here too. Yes, thank you, the staff of THPRD, for all you do. So here at Cedar Hills Rec Center, the funds will be used to install air conditioning and air filtration systems in this gymnasium. In future emergency events, we think about what the past couple years have been like with extreme heat and wildfires. This gym will be a very important community resource. Even with winter storms, we had a combination of extreme heat, winter storms, wildfires, and we want to be prepared, and that's what this is about. Six other THPRD sites will benefit as well from these funds, expanding the emergency response capability here in Washington County. So I'm honored to have secured, this is a little bit more than $946,000 for this project. I also want to thank my Senate partners, Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley, because it has to get through both chambers, and they really helped with that important work in our appropriations process.
And that was Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici. Portlanders will be using a new method of voting in the upcoming fall election, ranked choice voting. Here's how it'll work. The ballot will be a spreadsheet-like grid with six columns for your first through sixth choices, and as many rows as there are candidates in your district. You fill in the circle for the candidate you want, depending on whether they're your first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, sixth choice. But be careful, if you fill in two or more circles under a number, like two first choices, neither of those votes will count. There's no primary, and there won't be any runoffs. The person you pick sixth could end up representing you, but if you only want to vote for one person, that's allowed. Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden speaking out on the rights of the disabled across America. He told other lawmakers about his Work Without Worry Act.
The Finance Committee gathers to discuss how to update and strengthen Social Security disability programs. Our objective is to make it easier to work for Americans who have a severe disability and want to work again. When I talk to those with disabilities, they constantly say they want to contribute to their communities and they want to work in the private sector. But the laws that are on the books today when it comes to work and Social Security are a bureaucratic, suffocating, mindless strait that makes it almost impossible to work while maintaining eligibility for benefits. I'm especially pleased to be able to say that here on the Finance Committee, this has been a bipartisan cause. And I'd like to recognize Senators Brown, Casey, and Cassidy in particular for a very strong bipartisan effort to cut through all of this Byzantine red tape. They want to, on a bipartisan basis, help Americans who count on Social Security. There is a bedrock principle here, and that is Social Security is to provide Americans with financial security and dignity, and that it's an earned benefit, something they contribute to out of each paycheck. But for too many, especially those with a disability, dignity has fallen by the wayside because of these barriers when they're attempting to work. The vast majority of those who receive disability benefits have worked at least 10 years, 10 long years, paying into Social Security with each paycheck, becoming severely disabled due to illness or accident is a devastating blow. Fortunately, Social Security is there to help those Americans get back on their feet. It often takes months or even years to demonstrate to Social Security that their disability prevents them from performing a regular job. In spite of that, so many Americans want a chance to go to work, even in a limited capacity. They want to be part of their community. Unfortunately, the rules at Social Security make working with a disability almost the equivalent of running a marathon. Many of those who try to work get an overpayment from Social Security due to these outdated rules. An overpayment is something where they still have to deal with, but these are earned benefits, and they're going to essentials like groceries, gas, and rent. Once Social Security realizes there's been a mistake, it often demands all of the money back, and they demand it quickly and in full. These overpayment fines can run in the tens of thousands of dollars, and too many Americans simply can't afford to pay. So something has to change, and what needs to change is to make it easier to work for those who want to work. I'm going to outline several ideas about how Social Security and Congress can help Americans do that, and in particular, so that Americans with disability can work without risking their eligibility for benefits and removing the red tape that holds them back. The first bill is modernizing the Supplemental Security Income Program, what's known as SSI. Here again, a bipartisan effort. Senators Brown, Casey, Cassidy, and Lankford, both sides of this dais, I would say to our guests and people who are following this, Democrats and Republicans leading the way, saying that Americans who receive SSI and are living on shoestring budgets with the average benefit only amounting to roughly $700 a month, those folks deserve a fair shake, and that means the program putting in place a meaningful update, the first one in 40 years. As a result, it's become harder and harder to keep benefits or engage in meaningful work due to artificially low income limits that haven't kept up with inflation. The most an American with SSI can have in their bank account is $2,000. That has been frozen since 1989. Today, that would be about $10,000. For SSI beneficiaries who attempt to work, benefits are reduced by a dollar for every $2 they earn above $85 per month. That amounts to a 50% income tax rate. That's higher than the highest rate in the tax code. Put your arms around that. Highest rate in the tax code. So it's time to bring these rules, heaven forbid, into the 21st century. And I'm glad to be able to join Senator Brown and Cassidy, Casey, and Lankford and several of our other colleagues to take the first step to bringing SSI into the 21st century with the savings penalty elimination feature. Next is our Bipartisan Work Without Worry Act. I introduced with Senator Cassidy. The idea is direct. For Americans with lifelong disabilities like Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, or an intellectual disability, there ought to be additional protections allowing them to work without risking Social Security. So our bill removes the risk of past earnings disqualifying an individual in this situation from receiving disability benefits based on their parents' work history. This ought to be a no-brainer, folks. It's a chance to have a life change for thousands of Americans who want to participate in the workforce but don't out of fear that federal rules could hurt their ability to be financially secure down the road. The last is overpayments. Over the past year, this committee has heard horror stories every day about Americans getting huge overpayment bills from Social Security. Often that's because the program's tremendous complexity or a mistake made by the agency caused the problem. When Commissioner Martin O'Malley came before the Finance Committee, he pledged to take action to address the severity of these overpayment clawbacks. This spring, he took an important first step. That was to give Americans more time and flexibility to correct these payment errors and put in motion a critical update to how payroll data is processed by the agency. That was something that the Finance Committee championed to help reduce overpayments in the future. We'll have additional steps that we're looking at that reduce the frequency of the overpayments happening in the first place. And I want everybody to understand we'll have more to say about that in the weeks ahead. So these are some of the steps the committee is exploring to improve Social Security. Each member of the committee knows the importance of work. And we understand as well the Social Security program's lifeline benefits. So we look forward to hearing from our witnesses, all of whom have expertise in the field, because they're going to help us knock down the barriers to work and modernize Social Security for every American. It's about time.
And that was Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Beginning July 1st, Oregon will no longer classify its beavers as predators, but instead as fur bearers. With this change, due to 2023's House Bill 3464, known as the Beaver Bill, landowners cannot kill a beaver for being a nuisance or because it may damage plants or crops. To kill a beaver, the landowner must get a permit from the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department, which will require the landowner to first try non-lethal mitigation strategies. The bill will not affect the killing of beavers for their fur during the hunting season, which runs from November 15th to March 15th, nor will it affect beaver trapping on public lands. Also under the bill, State Fish and Wildlife will collect more detailed information on where beavers are, what damage they may be causing, and when and why Oregonians kill beavers. By the 1800s, the North American beaver, the continent's largest rodent, was nearly extinct in Oregon. There's no estimate of how many beavers currently live in Oregon. It's the unmistakable call of kitten Sheldon. Or the adorable sounds of Ranger and Leonard. It is peak kitten season right now, according to the Oregon Humane Society. They've got more than 850 cats and kittens waiting for their forever homes in both Portland and Salem, so they're moving to walk-in adoptions and holding kitten adoption weekends at participating Petcos. You can find out more on the OHS website. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is simmering for summer.
Summer begins. So what? Unless you're in school or connected with someone who is. Heat dome back east, nights still cool here. So many seasons to choose from. Some of us break out our summer clothes in March. Fire season's begun. Olympics coming soon. It's the season of sunburns, festivals, travel. You need a ticket to visit Multnomah Falls. Parents trying to figure out what to do with their kids when each parent has a job or two. The living is easy. Back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Ain't no cure for the summertime blues. The political season is slowly accelerating. War, gun, violence, impatience, blaming others are always in season. Five people in Portland got killed in by traffic in 2 days. Some are harder to escape than winter, since most have heat but not AC. We all need a place to swim. Some nights there's so much grilling, vegetarians are cautioned to stay indoors. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, skies mostly clear, down to a low of 60. Tomorrow's weather, mostly sunny, up to 91. Today in history, on this date in 1941, after a long and bitter struggle by Henry Ford, the Ford Motor Company signed its first contract with the United Automobile Workers of America. Our quote of the day is from Henry Ford. Anyone who stops learning is old, whether at 20 or 80. Anyone who keeps learning is young. The greatest thing in life is to keep your mind young. Seeing states going in vastly different directions in their election rules and policies, as Mike Moen reports, with the 2024 race for the White House coming into focus, analysts are looking at how each state shapes its voting laws.
On the heels of its primary election, North Dakota has received a fair grade in a new report that examines voting laws for each state. The Movement Advancement Project's analysis gives North Dakota high marks for things such as voting rights for formerly incarcerated individuals and having an adequate early voting period. But not having paid time off for voting and not requiring a post-election audit are among other factors weighing down the grade. The project's Brian Hinkle also notes North Dakota is part of the wave of conservative-led legislatures that banned private grants for election administration.
While there are reasonable arguments that elections are a public function and therefore should be funded by the government, the reality is that states and local election offices that have still had to rely on inconsistent and limited federal funding, and these funding gaps are likely to persist.
Hinkle echoes other experts who say misinformation about voter fraud has played a role in scaling back funding sources. He warns that while local offices still carry out fair elections, aging voting equipment and other constraints take their toll. That creates ripple effects such as longer wait times at polling sites and vulnerability in protecting against foreign interference. Nationally, Hinkle says the project's latest report shows that since 2020, 18 states have taken steps to expand voting access, while nearly half of all states have enacted tighter restrictions.
And I think it's evident that the continued polarization of states and the divergence highlighted in this report has the potential to sow confusion among voters and lead to potential disenfranchisement, particularly for marginalized groups who already face barriers to the ballot box.
The project did cite a lack of voter protections for North Dakota's native populations. The state's long-debated voter ID law is often described as an obstacle for tribal areas during elections. Meanwhile, with the 2024 presidential election coming up, Hinkle predicts state legislatures will be very active early next year in updating voting policies based on any fallout, as there was after the 2020 vote. This is Mike Moen.
Former President Donald Trump now says he loves Milwaukee. Civil rights groups reject designated protest zones for the Republican National Convention, and a New York Equal Rights Amendment is restored on the November ballot. With more in the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
They say, oh, he doesn't like Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee. I said, you got to fix the crime. We all know that. You got to make sure the election's honest.
Former President Donald Trump tells supporters outside Milwaukee he not only loves the city, but he chose it to host next month's Republican National Convention. Trump reportedly called Wisconsin's largest city horrible at a recent meeting with House Republicans. The convention is the middle of next month, just after Trump's sentencing in his New York hush money case, and 3 weeks after the first debate. Meanwhile, activist groups are suing Milwaukee over the convention's designated protest zones, claiming they restrict their First Amendment rights. Protesters want to gather within sight of the FISERV Forum, but a city ordinance would prevent that. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson says he's listening to all sides.
The demonstrators want to be on stage in FISERV Forum, and the RNC would rather that they be on the moon. We need to strike a balance and have a place that's reasonable, and so we'll make the right decision on that.
One group, the Coalition to March on the RNC, says it plans to march its protest route regardless of the lawsuit's outcome. Chicago officials are also negotiating protest routes with groups that sued after their protest permits were denied for the Democratic convention in August. A New York appeals court has ruled a constitutional amendment to enshrine abortion rights and ban discrimination based on gender identity can appear on the November ballot. A state Supreme Court judge had previously ruled the legislature did not follow required procedures to put the Equal Rights Amendment before voters, but State Senator Liz Krueger says the protections are long overdue.
Guess what we've learned recently? The courts can change, and suddenly protections you thought you had because of court cases aren't there anymore.
The Justice Department says new Alabama restrictions on voter assistance may discriminate against people with disabilities. A new law bans anyone other than close family members from helping with an absentee ballot. The law's backers say it prevents undue influence over voting. But Allison Molman with the ACLU of Alabama says even providing a stamp could be prosecuted as a crime.
Although we've been told this is about ballot harvesting, it's about punishing neighbors for helping each other in this state, and that can't stand.
Federal law allows voters with disabilities to get help from whoever they choose. Laws limiting voter assistance face court challenges in several states, and the DOJ is looking at one in Ohio. And finally, Louisiana has become the first state to require the Ten Commandments be displayed in public school classrooms. Supporters call the religious text a foundational document for the nation. But State Senator Royce Duplessis tells CBS that lawsuits are likely.
You don't have to be a constitutional scholar to see that this is problematic and it flies in the face of the First Amendment.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A trade mission in Canada focuses on Indigenous food. And National Go Skate Day rolls into Navajo Nation. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez and National Native News.
Indigenous agribusiness leaders, U.S. government officials, and state representatives are on a trade mission in Canada. They're working on developing export markets for Indigenous businesses and products. U.S. Department of Agriculture Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs, Alexis Taylor, says it's the first of its kind focused on Indigenous producers.
So we have participants on this trade mission that are tribal producers with the made or produced by American Indians, which is the official trademark. And we also have producers from the Native Hawaiian community operating on Native Hawaiian homeland.
Taylor says they're having standard business-to-business meetings, but they're also facilitating high-level nation-to-nation policy discussions. Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan is part of the delegation. She says the trade mission is giving Indigenous producers additional skills and opportunities.
And I think having peers who are part of this trip, as well as experts who can help to remove obstacles and think about what is possible, has been incredibly powerful.
The delegation also includes more than a dozen tribal agribusinesses and agricultural leaders from 13 Native nations, a representative from the Intertribal Agricultural Council Board, and officials from Maine, North Carolina, and Oregon departments of agriculture. Products include tea, poultry, wine, honey, popcorn, wild rice, and salmon. Go Skate Day is June 21st, and a special event is being held on the Navajo Nation at the Two Gray Hills Skate Park in Two Gray Hills, New Mexico. Jill Freitas has more.
Amy Danette Deal is the creator of Danesgate Garden Project and founder of For Kinship. She has worked closely alongside fellow Indigenous skater Shawnshine Harrison.
Pretty amazing day. I think we're supposed to get a little thunderstorms in the afternoon to make it really exciting.
Danette Deal says this is also in celebration of the one-year anniversary of their mentorship programs. And as part of that celebration, they'll be having giveaways and skating competition. While kids and teenagers were the initial target for these festivities, Deal says it brings people of all ages together.
It's intergenerational community center. It's grandma and grandpa. It's, you know, Shay and Shema. It's aunties and uncles. It's the little tiny babies are there. People are driving up, setting up a little bonfire and like hanging out there for their kids. It just warms my heart every time I go out there and just see families show up, because then the kids have the families rooting them on, you know, and they're going to try even harder.
With the 2024 Olympics coming up in July, Deal is confident one of the skaters in Navajo Nation will be joining them during the next competition in 2028.
There's just no question we're going to have an Olympic athlete, because those kids are so focused. They've come so far in just 1 year that we're just trying to keep up with them.
Deal says the major player in the success of the Indigenous skateboard world is Shawnshine Harrison. Harrison has been working with the youth for years and says it's because of him that the Dene Skate Garden Project is so successful.
He's just a community hero, because consistency is so important for our kids, that somebody shows up again and again and again. To have somebody who has such a kind and good heart, who's so passionate about skateboarding, that's the guy that's like teaching them. And we just, I can't say enough positive things. He's a skate park hero.
The National Go Skate Day celebration will take place on Friday. I'm Jill Freitas.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new candy company is making fruit chews from fruits and vegetables that otherwise would end up in a landfill. Suzanne Potter has more in the story.
40% of food is wasted worldwide, but a new candy company is trying to make a dent in that and fight climate change to boot. The company is called Climate Candy, and their Faves fruit chews are made from imperfect-looking fruits and vegetables. CEO Amy Keller says about 10% of all greenhouse gas comes from landfills, where food waste rots and produces methane.
20 billion pounds of produce goes to waste each year simply because they are excess or not perfectly shaped for grocery stores. And meanwhile, climate change is escalating. People are going hungry. We found this to be unacceptable, you know, wasting so much food, all while running out of land, water, and healthy soil.
In 1906, Keller's family founded Spangler Foods, which makes Dum Dum lollipops, circus peanuts, and sweethearts. In 2018, she combined the family business with her interest in global health and co-founded Climate Candy. She says her goal is to reduce food waste and thus lower the amount of land disturbed to grow crops while helping farmers sell their full harvest. Keller says Climate Candy is about making a lower carbon footprint, sustainable packaging, and upcycled ingredients.
If we can just help people realize their power in our highest potential solution to heal ourselves and the planet is just what we choose to eat, and that includes all of us, that's really been our secret to success.
The candy is made from a puree of vegetables like carrots and beets and flavored with many different fruits, including cherry, apple, blueberry, raspberry, lemon, orange, and strawberry. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now let's check out this week's point puzzle.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked what the following cities have in common: Mobile, Alabama, Nashua, New Hampshire, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Eugene, Oregon. Well, the answer is that all of the consonants in each city are contained in the name of its home state. Our winner this week is Levy, who listens to KPOV in Bend, Oregon.
Listen now to words that begin with letter C.
Crazy character, constantly creating concoctions. Catalyst, a cannibalistic rhymes, conqueror, correctly connecting. Craniums crumble down, consistent capacity.
For the new puzzle, take a commonly defined set of seven things that is relevant to this month. Remove all letters that are not unique, and what you have left are the letters from the words wavy tub. So again, start with a commonly defined set of seven things. Remove all the letters that are not unique, and